Dancing by David Anthony Clark. And you are listening to Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. I'm Catherine Davis. Stay tuned, and we will be with you after we hear just a bit more music.
Yeah. I'll be waiting by the shore. Stand in a circle with love and arms around you, yeah. Come to the river where the mighty waters flow. And as the river unwinds, you'll see the turns of your life.
And this is Heart of Mind. I'm Catherine Davis, and I'm going to invite you to just relax and breathe with me for just a moment as we go forward with our program today. There's a lot going on in the world, as we hear. I'm really happy to see that the dam is starting to break with regard to information, because our future and our well-being depends on us being very much willing to look at the ugly truth. So the idea is to not allow it to make us sad or to make us feel somehow disempowered or any of those things. It's just healthy to do that, to be able to see the world for what it is. And we heard so far some wonderful music, I think, and music that I have loved for a long time with regard to some of these old versions or oldies, one might think of it. And we heard from The Animals, House of the Rising Sun. Come to the River by Diane Reeves, and Air and Angels by Lotus. I have some more music lined up for you, so hopefully we'll be able to get to that. But I also have a video that I'm going to share, and it comes from one of my favorite reliable podcasters, and that's Dr. John Campbell. Dr. John Campbell is really, from all appearances, quite a wonderful human being. He really goes through the data, the studies, and helps to really translate a lot of that into the language of laypersons, such as myself, especially with regard to these things. But the problem is that because of the really heavy censorship of opposing views, it becomes very difficult for information to be disseminated. And it's also very difficult for people to receive care who need care. And one of the reasons that I'm interested in this in particular is because I, on a personal level, do have family members who have been impacted by our current health crises and are still struggling with certain aspects of it. And I'm also really concerned about this whole suppression, because it's not just a suppression of quacks or people speaking against a particular issue. It's that the full debate is no longer being allowed. And you'll see that in this video where Dr. Campbell says, I can play this because this person is in government, but I don't really remember the details, because he doesn't want to get his platform banned. And I think that that's really unfortunate. In the beginning of our COVID crisis, there was a real problem with some people having long COVID, and people were remaining sick for months up to years after the initial onslaught of the virus. But now there's a different situation where there's a significant rise in all-cause deaths, and they're not being looked at. No one is saying that it's a particular cause, but even the conversation is being suppressed. So I'm going to play this for you, and it's the UK Parliament vaccine debate. Normally, in the old days, we would get news from around the world, but nowadays that's not the case. We're really quite dependent upon journalists and people who are going to be doing their own research and really diving into the evidence. The evidence is there to show some cause for concern. And so I wanted to play this for you, and then we'll come back on the other end.
My warm welcome to today's talk, Wednesday, the 9th of November. Now, there's a debate going on in the UK Parliament about the safety of COVID vaccinations. Now, I'm unable to comment on a lot of the detail here because of my own ignorance on this matter. But thankfully, in the UK, we live in a parliamentary democracy, and members of Parliament are completely free to voice their opinions. And everything I'm going to play is already on YouTube on the parliamentary channel. So some interesting views are expressed, and I would encourage you to listen to this video if you can. Some people might think that the risk-benefit analysis has now changed. Now, I'm going to start off with a very brief clip from Mr. Elliot Colburn, Member of Parliament, and let's just see what he has to say. This only lasts about a minute, so please stick with it. There's some important stuff coming up here.
602171, relating to the safety of the COVID-19 vaccines. On behalf of the Petitions Committee, I will read out the prayer of this petition, which states that there has been a significant increase in heart attacks and related health issues since the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccines. This needs immediate and full scientific investigation to establish if there's any possible link with the COVID-19 vaccination rollout. It is the duty of government to ensure that the prescribed medical interventions of its response to coronavirus are safe. We believe that the recent and increasing volume of data relating to cardiovascular problems since the COVID-19 vaccine rollout began is enough to warrant a full public inquiry. This petition has amassed over 107,000 signatures, including signatories from my own Carshalton and Wallington constituency. And I'd like to first begin by putting on record my gratitude to the Petitions Committee clerks and the team behind the scenes for organising today's debate, but also particularly the Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency, or MHRA, who met with me recently to brief me on their vaccine safety surveillance strategy. Now, Sir Roger, throughout the course of my speech, I'll be pointing out why I do not think that the government should be launching a public inquiry into vaccine safety. I think it would be a waste of taxpayers' money, and I do not think it is necessary for reasons that I will go through throughout the course of my speech. But just to give a bit of background, Sir Roger, the COVID-19 vaccine has been at the centre of...
Okay, so that was Mr. Elliot, that was Mr. Elliot Colburn, a Member of Parliament. Now, he's been fully briefed by the Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency, an official government body that gives advice on these things. Now, I do seem to remember a video a couple of days ago where we did note that the MHRA is 86% funded by the pharmaceutical industry and other vested, industries. So that's not going to influence them at all, of course. We're not saying that. But that is where he gets his information from. And the full line of his argument is there on the government channel. Now I'm going to go and listen to Mr. Danny Kruger, Member of Parliament for Devizes. And Mr. Kruger gives information that I personally am ignorant of. So it's good of him to give it, because I can't remember. So let's listen to Mr. Danny Kruger now. This goes on for a few minutes. We might chat about it part way through, but just give him the time, because he says things that I can't remember. So over to Mr. Danny Kruger now.
I do regret his response to my honourable friend, Member for Christchurch, I think, who raised the point about medical expertise, which cast some doubt on the vaccines. And my friend chose to smear all opponents of the vaccine programme. There, of course, are lunatics out there who are making absurd and outrageous claims, but I do suggest that there are many reasonable and respectable people who have anxieties about the vaccine programme, and particularly, of course, in their own cases, those of themselves and their families who have suffered as a result of the programme. And I'm a member of the All-Party Parliamentary Group. My friend, Member for Christchurch, chairs looking at vaccine injuries. And we met, I think there was the first meeting of the APPG last week in committee room in Portcullis House, and we met there. It was only, I'm afraid, a tiny handful of colleagues, but well over 100 members of the public attended, which isn't the usual story for an APPG. And I felt somewhat ashamed on behalf of Parliament. This was the first time that those members of the public, families of the bereaved, themselves injured citizens, had had the opportunity to be in a room with members of this House. And I'm very pleased that we are now having this debate, and I'm particularly pleased that we have the opportunity for members of the public to hear from the Minister about this topic. And I should say to members of the public watching that we have here a very good minister who is genuinely committed to health and to public health, and has shown a real interest in this topic and in the effect of COVID policy since before when she was a backbench MP. And I would say that the UK as a whole, and while many questions need to be answered about our COVID response, is by no means the worst offender. We're not Canada or New Zealand or China, places where they think they can exterminate COVID by depriving the population of the most basic civil liberties. But we still do have, I'm afraid, much to ask, questions to ask ourselves, and even much to be ashamed of. I'm particularly ashamed, and I put it on record in hindsight, of my own vote to dismiss the care workers who didn't want to take the vaccine. And I very much hope that the 40,000 care workers who lost their jobs can be reinstated and indeed compensated. Now, a group of us, including, I think, the Minister, held out against compulsory vaccination of health workers when that was proposed by the government last winter. And that resistance, I think, turned the tide to a degree on government policy. And we emerged from lockdowns quicker than we might have otherwise. And yet we still have this policy of mass vaccination. And I do want to query this on behalf of constituents who have written to me. And my query starts with this simple point. In October 2020, when the vaccine was getting ready for rollout, Kate Bingham, the head of the vaccines agency, said this: there's going to be no vaccination of people under 18. It's an adult-only vaccine for people over 50, yeah, focusing on health workers and care home workers and the vulnerable. Now, why was it extended to the whole population? I don't think we've ever had a completely satisfactory answer to that question. And I raise it because my concern is that in extending the vaccination programme, it became an operation in public persuasion, an operation in which dissent is unhelpful or even immoral, justifying suppression, even vilification of those who raise concerns. Happy to give way.
I thank my humble friend for giving way. Would he also question, unlike any other vaccine, the vaccine was actually given to people who'd got natural immunity because they'd actually contracted, and provably contracted, the virus. And so they would have had natural immunity. Why were those people vaccinated?
My honourable friend is absolutely right. The best vaccine against COVID is COVID. And many people were indeed naturally immune. And I think there are questions to be asked about the effects of vaccination on the immune system. Now, I do understand why. My honourable friend, the member for Castleton and Wonford, made a very understandable point about the importance of resisting misinformation. And certainly, there, as I mentioned, many crazy theories out there which we need to not give credence to. If we're talking about a programme of vaccinating the population, it is important that the public is persuaded to do what the government wants them to do. And I understand why the government should have a public health information campaign along those lines. But it is an essential principle of medical ethics that people need to be able to give their informed consent before any treatment. And I do worry about how we can say that consent was fully informed in all cases. Throughout there has been, not, I wouldn't say deliberate, but there has been some misinformation, possibly accidental, in favour of the vaccine. We can tell this with hindsight. Perhaps the most egregious, and the doctor that my honourable friend mentioned earlier presented on this to the APPG last week, Dr. Malhotra, the claim that the vaccine is 95% effective. And what that means is simply the relative risk, not the actual absolute risk, reduction in risk to an individual. The absolute risk reduction is really less than 1%. There was the widespread claim that the vaccine stops transmission, so people should take the jab to protect other people. We were all told that. We all believed that for many months. Last month, we heard from Pfizer that their vaccine was never tested to see whether it would stop transmission. And yet we had the notorious claim by Professor Chris Whitty that even though the vaccine brought no benefit to children, children should be vaccinated to protect wider society. Now, I'm all for thinking about society, not the individual, Sir Roger, but that, again, it feels to me a profound break with medical ethics. And a lot of people are asking what the vaccine does to children and young people. And Dr. Whitty is right that the benefit to healthy children seems to be essentially nil. And yet there are genuine questions to be asked. And I do not verify these questions. I merely ask them on behalf of my constituents. How do we explain the increase in the rates of myocarditis, the increase in heart attacks and the excess deaths among young people? And indeed, in the general population, it is plausible, not definitive, but plausible, that the vaccine is responsible for more harms than we know about. And I mentioned in my intervention earlier that we know from the yellow card scheme that up to 1 in 200 people vaccinated report an adverse reaction. and that is in itself bad enough, but we also know that yellow card reports, the adverse effects are significantly underreported through the yellow card scheme. Based on the MHRA's own research, there may be as many as 10 times more serious adverse reactions, serious ones, not just any ones. There may be 10 times more serious adverse reactions than the yellow card system shows. Happy to give way.
Does he agree with me that it's not? It's perhaps important for the minister to explain how those people who say they've experienced damage from the vaccine can have themselves heard, not just via the yellow card scheme, not just via the module in the public or existing public inquiry, and not just an application for vaccine damage compensation, that there needs to be more meaningful ways in which people can engage with their experiences of damage.
I'm very grateful to the Honourable Lady, and I absolutely agree. And I think that today is a very important moment for the Minister to hear from members here on behalf of residents. And I would encourage a far greater engagement with citizens who have themselves suffered from vaccine damage or even lost loved ones through it. Now, I mentioned these rather terrifying facts, and there may be innocent explanations for them, and I very much hope they are. If these are conspiracy theories, we need them to be comprehensively and courteously debunked. So I have four questions for the Minister to close, Sir Roger. First, will she review the vaccination of children? We know that children have strong naturally acquired immunity and that the chance of death from COVID for a healthy child is only 1 in 2 million. So I believe that we should follow other countries like Denmark and stop vaccinating children altogether, but I invite the Minister to consider reviewing that aspect of the policy. Second, will she make representations in government and with Baroness Hallett that the terms of reference for her inquiry should be broadened to explicitly include the efficacy and safety of the vaccines? And I hear what my honourable friend says is absolutely right, that the inquiry does include reference to the vaccination programme and its effects, and he may well be right that that is sufficient and that the review will properly consider the topics that we're discussing today. I hope that that is the case. But I think that needs to be made more explicit, and so I'd invite the Minister to comment. Happy to give way.
I actually wrote to Baroness Hallett asking her to ensure that it was specifically in the terms of reference that it should cover the issue of safety of vaccines and the impact of vaccines. And as a result of not just my representations, but representations from others, the terms of reference were amended to make it quite clear that vaccines and the impact of vaccines and the potential damage of vaccines is included within the terms of reference.
For that clarification, it concerns me that it took his representations to even get the vaccine, the effect of the vaccines considered by the inquiry. And I suggest we need to go further and talk about efficacy and safety, not just the impact. So I think we need to be quite explicit about what we want answers to. These issues need to be directly covered. Now, this inquiry, I think we do need the public inquiry to consider this because of the compromised nature of medical regulation in our country. And I mentioned earlier that the MHRA is funded by the pharmaceutical companies who produce the drugs and vaccines that it regulates. And there might be some universe in which this makes sense, but I don't think this is that universe. I don't think it's right. And third, we need to do more, a lot more, for the injured and bereaved. And as the Honourable Lady mentioned, I agree with all of my friend from Christchurch's recommendations, and we'll hear from him shortly about what needs to be done to raise the threshold for compensation for the injured and the speed of payouts. And I also agree with him that we need clinics for people with adverse reactions, just as we do for people with long COVID. And finally, following this, we need to change the power imbalance. I am sorry on behalf of Parliament that this is the first proper debate we've had on this subject. I regret that victims and families have had to struggle so hard to get the engagement of the system. I hope the Minister will agree to meet with some of the people who are here today and other representatives of families affected by the vaccines for a proper exchange of information and ideas. And I hope that she will request that Dame June Rain of the MHRA meets with them as well, rather than, I'm afraid to say, ignoring letters for months. And I want to hope that end by hoping that with the new government that takes over this week, the current minister herself has only just been recently appointed, will stay in post, and that we can start a new chapter in the story of COVID. No more remote power telling people what to do. Let's put truth and justice back into our public life and restore trust in the experts we rely on. Thank you, Sir Roger.
We should be all right. We should be all right for time. But
okay. Thanks for bearing with us on that. Danny Kruger there was saying quite a few things that I can't remember. So
I love the way he does it. I can't remember. But he's been alluding to some of these problems for a long time. And it's very interesting, too, when we look at some of the medical professionals who are commenting, you could see over time their own evolution just based on the evidence that presents itself. And I would say that in the United States, this collusion is even further imbalanced by the fact that most of our mainstream media is funded by these very same pharmaceutical industries, so that it becomes very difficult to gain access to information, and that combined with the censorship, banning, and attack on people who have other positions, that it becomes very difficult. And I feel a need to save people's lives, if I can, with information. I just want to bring out the seriousness of this. And I also have a recommendation of a film that I'm not going to be able to play for you because I have to edit the language, but we'll get to it. Also, I wanted to point you to a documentary. You won't find it in the familiar platforms. You'll only find it on Rumble, rumble.com. And it's the world premiere of a documentary called Died Suddenly. And it deals with the rise in all-cause deaths. And what's interesting about it is that a lot of the persons being interviewed, not all, but a lot, are actually undertakers. So they're reporting what they're finding through their autopsies. And what they're saying is that there's something very serious going on that has never happened before in the history of all time in medicine. So it's a devastating film, not for children, and not for anyone who doesn't want to know the real potential dangers here. But you can find it on rumble.com, the world premiere of Died Suddenly. So I'm going to put on a piece of music.
If only you believe like I believe. Person, Bronx, New York.
Welcome, Daryl.
We really need this station because what Catherine is providing, you aren't going to find anywhere else. Now, Dr. Campbell and Dr. Syed Mobeen are giving out really strong information. And the reason that Dr. Campbell is unable to remember things is because he's terrified of being deplatformed. So it's really great that some of these hearings with the information is coming out. And the most important thing that I've been finding is that it's a matter of linguistics. Have you noticed that people will come up with a concept, they'll give it a name, and then the people who are opposed to it will twist the meaning of what the name that they give it to fit whatever their anti-situation is? So, for instance, if you call something a vaccine that fails to stop transmission and keep people from getting the disease, how is that possible?
Yeah.
So if people hear the word vaccine, what are they going to relate to? They're going to relate to things that stop transmission and keep people from getting the disease. Now, if you still get the disease, and if you can still transmit the disease, how is that a vaccine?
Well, that is the million-dollar question. They changed the definition legally. You know, if you look it up now, it'll be different than it was 5 years ago.
The other thing is emergency use. You notice how they failed to mention that zero of these products are standardized, approved. They're all under emergency use. And my understanding is if there's a cure for something, then you're unable to use it for emergency use. Where are the lawyers helping the people understand this so that we can get on to... It's been almost 3 years, and I've heard the word immune system 5 times, maybe? So how are you going to fight? How are you going to take something to stimulate something that you're failing to build?
Well, these are all the questions that do need to be answered, and I'm hoping that by just putting it out there, I don't have the answers, but I think that answers need to be brought forward. In the documentary, it shows, you know, the handout that comes with the material. It's blank, and it says blank on purpose. You know, so they're not giving information. They have to apply for release of information. They're trying to sneak it out to us. But there are some real problems here. And what's interesting, do you remember in the beginning when they were saying that it had to be kept at a certain temperature?
Yes.
That went away. What happened to that? You know, so it may just be that there was some decision made somewhere that took it into a downturn. So, but we need to know what it is so that people can stop being harmed.
Exactly the point. And so what I'm attempting to understand is the people who are perpetuating or who are defending that that person is at risk unless you behave in a certain way. And they then go to the structure to get their facts when the structure has been very unreliable and ever giving clear.
And I would go so far as to say lie. I mean, if it was very clear from the beginning that it didn't prevent transmission, then, you know, that's a lie. I got to go. I have more people hanging on. Thank you so much for calling.
Keep sharing, Catherine, and prosper.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye now. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. Good tidings and good cheer to the beloved family, such as we are. I have a couple comments. I first of all appreciate your music and your clips on the British Parliament. This morning at 1 a.m., as Coast to Coast came on W-O-R-A-M, 710, Kristen Wahl, who Lisa Gore a few months ago had on her web program. And he's somewhat of a regular on Coast to Coast AM because he has a book. It's called My Heart Book. And he's a big fan of a turmeric and does a lot of work with people who are terminal around heart disease getting stem cells, some process there. But he came on to report, and it wasn't clear, and of course radio goes by so quickly in these headline-type stories. Both he and George Norwe were referencing a report they had seen, but not being clear about the source of it, but some official report that 59% of the current deaths of COVID are people who have been vaccinated or boosted. Okay, so we all need to research that further. The other point to make, and we don't really have anybody in the black community looking at, say, future inquiry and the technologies of the 21st century, but vaccine is the wrong term. So vaccine comes from cow, the word cow, where you actually take in from the cowpox a small amount of an actual virus, which it doesn't happen. This is not, it's not a vaccine. It's what they call message RNA. So it's actually a genetic manipulation that we don't know too much about, and that was not, a lot of people still don't know, you know, they call it the vaccine. So that's something in itself that needs to be looked into, genetic manipulation. You mentioned about the temperature, Catherine. People who've actually looked at it, they say that it's like some synthetic creatures seem to be swimming around when it gets to room temperature. So 59% of the people who are currently dying have been so-called vaxxed or boosted, and that's what I have to contribute.
Thank you, and I have another caller. We're going to get that in. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, Catherine. I just want to thank you for excellent programming, as usual. And I just want to comment on the beautiful listeners who are responding to what you're doing right now. And an observation is that is playing PSAs from the state of New York, encouraging people to get boosters, as which was absurd. And I got in touch with the station manager and made a complaint about that. And you know, and it was like, it was almost like, well, we need equal time, you know. And what it made me think is that, did we need equal time when there were weapons of mass destruction and we knew about those lies? Was anybody saying that there's a contingent of people we need to make sure that who support war, that we're programming to them, that we're supporting them, that we're giving them? It doesn't work that way. It never has worked that way. 99.9% of every mass media out there encourages, you know, what the mainstream is about. That's not what we're here for.
Yeah, the difference, however, though, is that, though there may be some risk, I can come on and give the counterbalancing view. And I think that this is something that we have to begin to build upon, because the propaganda, the narratives are so strong that it doesn't seem to fall into the other kind of categories that W would jump on, like the weapons of mass destruction. And I don't want to go into the same space that the mainstream is and just condemning people who are afraid or who believe what they're being told, because that's essentially most of my family. So I understand where you're coming from, and it's unfortunate, but I don't want to go that extra mile of presuming that people are just submitting to a falsehood. I think people believe this. And the only way that I can have an impact on this issue is to take that risk, just like people are on social media. They're taking the risk to try to get it out there because it's our friends and our family that are being impacted. So I just wanted to give that caveat.
Yeah, no, I need perspective, and I'm glad you gave me that, and I'm trying not to express my upsetness of the situation that I've had to endure. And I just don't know, you know, where the wisdom, or we've had some time now where the thinking, good quality thinking or debate or, you know, conversation about this stuff doesn't go deeper. I mean, Samori Marksman goes deep. You know, Lambe Brass, he went deep.
Yeah.
Robert Knight, he went deep. You know, we're not going deep, man. You know, in the spirit of those gentlemen, God rest their souls, you know?
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you. And one of the sayings that Robert Knight would say is that the purpose of a system is what it does. So you don't look at what it says. You look at what it does in order to determine really what's going on. But I also think that to pay attention also to the level of propaganda and the mind games that are being played with people so that they don't, you know, you can go from channel to channel to channel in the mainstream. You're going to hear the same line. Most people are not even, they're not getting a whisper of information to even base it upon. So at least here we can put that information out there and people can begin to consider it. And it's building. We've had congressional hearings here in the U.S. They're reviewing it in London, and other countries are making other decisions. It's just a matter of keeping it out there, and I think that that's what we have to do. So, yeah, thank you for your call.
I'm following your lead because you seem to have it a better perspective than I do, and I thank you for that.
You're very welcome. Take good care. There is not a single commercial media outlet, and very few popular social media outlets will allow the truth to come through. And therein lies the problem. It isn't the people who believe what they're being sold. It's the fact that we have these corporations who make the pharmaceuticals, giving money to the politicians who approve the pharmaceuticals, and to the institutions that manage medical care and doctors. And so there's a lot going on. And rather than becoming personally frustrated, we just have to keep marching forward. If you look at other issues in our world, it didn't happen overnight. Black people didn't go from slavery to voting overnight. It was a long haul. I happen to think that what's happening now with the all-cause death and it's not just the all-cause death, this is also accelerating diseases. So you're getting more diabetes, you're getting more heart disease, you're getting more lung disease, you're getting more cancers. There's a lot happening, and because everything is chopped up and hidden, no one is seeing the bigger picture. But people are going to be looking to their left and looking to their right and saying, what happened to my neighbor? What happened to my sister, brother? What happened to my child? And there is going to be an uprising and about this of some kind. And people are going to demand the truth. And the more I can put it out there, perhaps the more people will not put themselves in harm's way unnecessarily. So I don't have all the answers, but I do want to put out a broader spectrum of the truth because, you know, it's serious. It's very serious. Over the holidays, I visited with family, and a lot of them are sick that weren't sick before. And those that were sick are a lot worse. And you could say it's as a result of COVID, but is it? I don't know. We need to find out. And studies need to be allowed to happen. Accounting needs to be allowed to happen. And as long as that's not being allowed, then I have to question whether or not there is something nefarious going on some level from some theater of operations. It's important. And so I'm just putting it out there. And also the other part of this equation is that we can do a lot to heal ourselves. We can do things to address these problems, but they need to be recognized as problems. What is the dynamic within the cellular structure that is taking place? And it looks like the promise that the vaccine would stay in the muscle has not been true. It leaks through into the bloodstream and gets carried to the various organs and begins to itself clot within the blood. So it's a serious thing. And I think that we need to reckon with it before more people are harmed by this hiding of the truth, which seems to be taking place, in my opinion. And I'm going to play a piece of music as we move into a transition of programs. Please do stay tuned. And I'm going to go retro and see if I can get Sweet Honey in the Rock, Breaths. And I love this song because it reminds us that we are interconnected with all that is, all that has been, and all that ever will be on a spirit life force level. Life is continuous. It goes on. Nothing ever ends. Life never ends. It transforms. And, well, that's my belief. So let's hear a little bit of this song, Breaths, and you'll stay tuned. Bum 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 bum. Listen more often to things than to beings. Listen more often to things than to beings. Tis the ancestor's bird when the fire's voice is heard. Tis the ancestor's bird in the voice of the waters. Those who have died have never known the dead. The dead are not under the earth. They are in the rustling trees. They are in the groaning woods. They are in the crying grass. They are in the moaning rocks. The dead are not under the earth. So listen more often to things than to beings. Listen more often to things.